I've been very delightedly watching all of the callers come onto the call one at a time. And at the same time, I've been really enjoying the listserv. So I'd like to thank all of you who have been part of the Love, Spirit, and You teleclass for diving into the contemplations, and thank those of you who've been kind enough to share with the rest of us, to share your experiences with the rest of us. There are a lot of things that people have said that I found moving and interesting and evocatory and instructive. But one thing that struck me that I just want to mention as we begin is something that Andrea shared on the listserv. She'd been contemplating the different kinds of love she felt in her life, she feels in her life, and she saw that that she felt fulfilled in several kinds of human love, but she also had a sense of not having completely fulfilled another. I believe the one she mentioned was mother love. And reading what she said, I thought, you know, this is of course true of many of us. We have a strong connection to some forms of love, human love, and also the broader kinds of love, you know, love for humanity, love for nature, and spiritual love in many forms. But there are other kinds of love or ways of loving where we might feel that we haven't fully experienced everything that love can be in life. And it might be that we haven't had a child or loved a child. We haven't had a romantic partner of the kind of the that in that sort of deep soul way that, you know, we may have longed for. We might feel that we haven't loved the people in our life enough, or that we haven't been loved, or that we haven't been able to make our love big enough or universal enough or oceanic enough. And yet, as Andrea went on to say, in any moment that we feel touched by the love of spirit, these feelings are soothed. They're kind of perhaps opened or perhaps balmed, you know, healed. Because the touching into the love of spirit can make you experience that whether you've had the karma to express love in all possible human ways, that just the same, love is within you and around you and is supporting you and is loving you. And to me, ever since I first began having that experience, that's been, you know, really the saving grace of life. So whether you experience spirit as something called God or as something that you call invisible angelic beings or Buddhas or goddesses, or just as pure, the pure feeling of openness and warmth, you know, there's a very beautiful way of describing the sense of love as a presence, is to really feel into what love feels like. And whether you're feeling a very, very subtle form of love, or a very dramatic, ecstatic form of love, all these forms of love have a share a quality of openness, of availability, you might say, that when you sense the presence of love, something in you opens. And another quality that love has, that in whatever form you may find it, is a quality of warmth. So if we think of unlove as somehow cold, love is warm. Love has this ability to melt the frozen places around our heart. And this feeling of being touched by invisible presence, you know, and as we were saying last week, one way of talking about love, which is kind of non-denominational or has less of the freight, the baggage that the word sometimes has for us. So when we feel blessed by presence, that feeling can completely dissolve the sense of lack or inadequacy, because it's subtle enough to seep into even the closed off corners of the heart. And so the presence of spirit love, of invisible love, whether or not it's coming from another person, whether or not it's coming from nature, whether or not it's coming from anything that we can name, it actually has the capacity to heal the unlove, which is perhaps the greatest cause of human suffering and conflict. I mean, if we really think about it, what it is that causes trouble in the world, what we can see is that it is that whole complex of feelings that we might call unlove. You know, the feeling of grievance or anger or a feeling of there not being enough. All of these are aspects of unlove, which is perhaps another name for contraction or ignorance. But really, the whole experience of contraction, of ignorance, of the deep roots of war and suffering, we could say that they're all rooted in being cut off from love, in the experience of unlove. And the sense of presence, this sense of the love of spirit, can dissolve it, no matter how strong it is. And in one English translation of the Gospel of St. John, Jesus tells the disciples that he has to leave the world so that the Comforter can come. In the English translation that I have, the Holy Spirit is called the Comforter. And I just think that's such a beautiful way of describing spirit, the love of spirit, or, you know, the love of Christ energy. It's the Comforter. Spirit is the Comforter. And calling it the Comforter, as I'm saying it, I'm now thinking of that thing I put over myself at night, you know, that spirit as a kind of blanket. But it actually is the one who comforts us for all the ways that we might feel or experience that love is lacking in human life or in our human life. Narada says in the Bhakti Sutras, divine love is nectarian in its nature. And of course he's talking about the love that has no object, the love that is pure presence. But I also think it's important for us to begin to remove the distinction between what the sages call divine love or divine presence or pure presence and any feeling of love, because the thing that separates what the sages, what the Bhakti Sutras calls pure love, love with no object, from, let's say, conditional love or attached love, really has to do with whether or not we're able to experience the truth that even when we're experiencing love in a way that's completely connected to or seems completely dependent on another person or on a place or on an activity, if we're able to recognize that even conditioned love is based at its core on the unconditioned love, then we can start to have what I think we can agree is the pure tantric recognition, which is that all forms of affection, from the slightest to the most expanded and ecstatic, are really forms of the immanent presence of that nectarian force that Narada calls divine love. So Let's find ourselves a posture, a comfortable posture. Feel that the sit bones are grounding into the seat. Feel that all of us are completely present and accounted for. Just for a moment, I'm
sure.
Hello.
Hello.
I've actually opened the phone to see how you all are. Karen, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. That's so great. I just wanted a moment of connecting with all of you, rather than the divine silence that is present when I have everybody muted. So I'm going to go back to muting everybody, and especially so that we won't hear the echo of my voice on the line. So welcome again. And before we sit, I had to reassure myself that everybody was really here. So feel the presence of your sitting bones rooting into the floor, into the seat. Feel your upper torso rising from that grounded base. Feel the shoulder blades release onto the back and the chest lift and open. Have the sense that your tongue relaxes onto the floor of the mouth and that your eyes become soft. And tune your attention to the breath as it flows in and out through the nostrils. One of our core practices in this class, and one of my favorite practices just in walking around, is to sense through the breath that love enters your body as the particles of air, as the touch of air. And just let yourself experience love flowing into you, flowing into your body. Love as presence, love as breath, love as prana. Letting yourself breathe in love and breathe out love. Again, not placing any conditions on how you experience love. So as you breathe in love and breathe out love, know that you may experience love as a very, very soft sense of the touch of the breath, as a growing tenderness, or simply as a feeling of allowing yourself to be fully present here in your body, in this space, in the room that you're sitting in, and to soften to the whole experience of being you in this moment, knowing that because the universe has chosen to manifest as you and as me and as all the rest of us, because the universe has chosen to enliven us through the breath, we are in fact in this moment being pickled in divine love. So we'll continue our conversation by chanting, and the chant that we'll do is the Om Namah Shivaya Gurave chant, which, to answer a question that came up last week, is a very old chant from the yoga tradition. It's actually one of the great dhyana mantras or meditation mantras that calls on the inner self in its form as the energy of being, the energy, the power of being, the power of awareness, and the power of blissfulness, and asks us to recognize that our inner consciousness, our inner being, has these intrinsic qualities of being, presence, of awareness, intelligence, and of joy, and that these intrinsic qualities are also the qualities of the great consciousness, the divine intelligence that has manifested as all this, and who constantly in every moment moves to reveal to us both the love that is our essence and the little specks of unlove that might temporarily keep us from experiencing it. So as we chant to the inner consciousness, which is also the inner guide, have the feeling that you're actually opening yourself to allow any traces of obstruction or obscuration to gently fall away, the way the skin of an onion might fall away, the way the husk of an ear of corn might fall away as the invisible hand of that guiding presence reveals what's behind all the veils and obscurations that make you forget that your consciousness is love. And we'll chant with the voice of Krishna Das, and then when the chant is done, I will repeat the words of the prayer for the well-being of all, and you can repeat it silently to yourself. we offer our practice asking that all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. May we know equanimity beyond hatred, grasping, and dullness. And may we experience moment by moment the equality of all that lives. So you can refresh your posture if it seems like the right thing to do in this moment, sensing the places in your body where you might be grasping or holding on and asking them to soften. And we're going to just take a couple of moments to direct an instruction to that part of ourselves that may feel just the tiniest bit wounded or vulnerable. Breathing in, silently say to yourself, may I feel loved. May I feel loved. Breathing out, silently say to yourself, may I know that I am held in love. May I feel loved on the inhalation. May I know that I am held in love on the exhalation. May I feel loved. May I know that I am held in love. Now, in the inhalation, may I know that love is what I am. On the exhalation, may I know that I am love. On the inhalation, may I know that love is what I am. On the exhalation, may I know that I am love. And if that phrase begins to morph so that your thought on the inhalation is love is what I am, and on the exhalation is I am love, that's good too. Inhaling, may I know that love is what I am. Exhaling, may I know that I am love. can open your eyes. And listen to these words of Hafiz. My beloved said, my name is not complete without yours. I thought, how could a human's worth ever be such? And God, knowing all our thoughts, and all our thoughts are innocent steps on the path, then addressed my heart. God revealed a sublime truth to the world when he sang, I am made whole by your life. Every soul completes me. So as we talk about the path of love, this enormously vast, incredibly rich, utterly mystical topic, which is so much at the heart of life, it's truly important to take a non-dual view and to realize that everything is always already love, and that even in our stumblings and our blindness, love is present. So in a certain sense, there's nothing to do. And it's very important to recognize that the absolute, the divine, the great intelligence, the spirit of the universe has taken form as each of us, because each of us is a completion of that wholeness, of that vastness. Each of us is intrinsic to it and significant to it. And each of us, in every step of our journey, is actually making it possible for the divine to see itself. Another facet of itself. So every moment when we are willing to be conscious of the divinity in ourselves and the relationship of love in which we're completely caught up, every moment like that is actually a moment when we could say we could say God cheers, we could say God is pleased. And of course at the same time, it's always an unfolding of love, even when we're not experiencing love, and that's the mystery of non-duality. But in the path of the heart, the path of the lover and the beloved, there is very definitely a journey, and that journey has stages that every tradition has more or less encoded in the same way. The stages of the journey are intricate. They are many-leveled. But basically, they can be divided into three stages, which are given different names and different aspects of different traditions, different devotional traditions. But basically, they fall into three categories. One is the stage that the Christian and Sufi and the Western teachings call the stage of falling in love. And that's pretty much what the Indian Bhakti traditions say as well. Falling in love, of course, doesn't always mean falling in love the way you fall in love with a romantic partner. The non-dual traditions tend to say to use the word awakening. So the falling in love stage is the moment when you realize in whatever way you do that in your deepest reality, you are something that's so much infinitely greater, wiser, more beautiful than what you conceive yourself to be, that very often, especially if you're walking the path of love, you're quite awed by your own beauty. Rumi used to say that beautiful phrase, if you could see your own beauty, you'd be the idol of yourself. And in my tradition, the tradition I was awakened in, I always remember the stories that people tell about that moment when they come out of a lifelong sense of unworthiness because of having been touched by a spark of grace, you know, that moment of awakening. And they'll say things like, I saw that there was this beauty in me that I'd never seen before. Or they'd say, I realized that actually my complex individual personality doesn't exist and all there is God. I mean, the awakening can be at many different levels and of many different kinds. And so that awakening, that falling in love, which can go on for quite a long time and has all the joy of romance in it, it's really the opening up of the path of the heart. And yet, no matter how long it goes on, at some point it will be succeeded by the second stage, which is sometimes called the stage of purification, is sometimes called the stage of separation. It's sometimes called the stage of doubt and conflict. But it's the moment when you realize that actually it's not going to be as easy as you thought it was. One of my great moments of self-disillusionment, as it were, on the path of love was quite early in my relationship with my guru. We were in New York. He was about to do a series of programs. And we had taken over a Russian school in the West 90s, and I was painting the office. And a friend of mine from my old life, which was only, you know, I'd really just sort of entered into this, the caravan of people following my teacher. And 3 months before, I'd been, you know, hanging out with this person who was a wonderful kind of a frenemy. And he came in and said hi, and he stood there for a minute looking at me up on the ladder painting the wall, and he said, wow, Swami Muktananda must be pretty great if he could get you to do physical work. And, of course, he was being cute and funny, and he was actually absolutely right. I was a person who did as much as I possibly could to not do physical work. But in that moment, I was furious, because in the newly awakened love, I had been spending actually most of my time doing service as physical work, and I was loving it. And I really felt that my true nature had been brought out in this kind of overflowing of awakening. So I snapped at him, and in that moment that I felt the surge of anger, which maybe some of you have also felt, I was just overwhelmed with shame and embarrassment, because I realized that this relatively small trigger had actually triggered my, let's say, untransformed state, my unlove. And in that moment, I was forced to experience the fact that I actually had work to do. I had purification to do. I had to recognize that with all the love and grace that had been flowing from my heart for the previous 2 months, that there was still a large reservoir of contraction. So this is a very critical moment in the path of love, in the relationship of love and spirit. It comes to us in different ways. And one of the lessons of this moment is the lesson of heartbreak, the lesson of disillusionment, disillusionment with self, disillusionment with others. So whether we experience it as the conflict of our love with our unlove, or whether we experience it as an entry into our kind of primal heartbreak wound, one of the things that we learn to do on the path of love is, and it's one of the great, great gifts of the path, is to use heartbreak, pain, separation, self-confrontation as instruments for our soul's growth and as signals, even clues, as to how to get closer to the essential aspects of spirit. And what most, as many of you know, the devotional paths are often filled with coded language that describes the uses of pain, the importance of this particular kind of suffering, which is not unconscious suffering. It's the suffering of growing consciousness, the suffering that can only come when we've been awakened to the deep love of the inner heart and realized that something separates us from it. In Sufism, it's called separation. In the Christian mystical path, it's famously described as a dark night of the soul. And in the path, in the devotional path, the experience is of communion being lost, of awakeness being darkened, of love being concealed, and even of heartbreak. So this moment when you recognize separation can be a very intense and painful moment. And it can also be one of those moments that really gives birth to the experience of longing, of yearning. And if you can allow that to happen, if you can allow your feeling of separation or your feeling of having been dipped into some aspect of the occluded, of the occlusion, of the veiling that keeps you from fully living in love, if you can tap into the yearning for awakening in that moment, then what you've tapped into is one of the primary sources of transformative shakti. It's why, you know, the poets like Kabir and Rumi, these are Kabir's words. Kabir says it's the intensity of the longing for the friend that does the work. And that's why in Kabir we see a slave of that intensity. So that intensity, that creative longing may come in different forms. And in some of the traditions it's described very, very dramatically. And you may know this story about the disciple who asks his guru, you know, what does it take for me to know myself, to know the truth? And the story goes that the guru grabs, it happened to be standing by a river, and the guru grabs his disciple's head and pushes it underwater. And when the disciple comes sputtering up, the guru says, so how did you feel when you were underwater? And when the disciple says, all I wanted was air, the guru says, that's how you have to want God. Now, most of us, most of the time, don't want God that badly. And one reason we don't is because there's so much else going on in our lives. And this, you know, we're living in a time when part of the creativity of spirit manifesting as people like us is that we're learning how to tune to spirit while living a life in the world. So what that means is that for many of us, the experience of separation will happen daily. Maybe 5 minutes after you get up from meditation. And so part of what we have to learn is how to work with the feeling of separation so that we can actually bring ourselves back again and again to the feeling of oneness, the feeling of spirit as a powerful felt sense of connection with the heart or with the witness. The traditions have different explanations for why this experience of separation from the heart takes place. And you know, one of the classic explanations is that it happens because the ego, the contracted self, has simply seized the experience of spirit and is blocking the river of love with demands or with emotions or with the feeling that spirit should love should look a certain way. And on the deepest level, of course, the feeling of separation is a kind of primal habit. There is a natural contraction or sense of separation from the wholeness that is part of being an individual. That is the original separation. And yet what we can learn to do is recognize that even in separation, even when we're bored or uninterested in practice or angry, that even there, even in that separated feeling or in that anger feeling or in that feeling of injustice or unfairness, we can remember to use it as a signal to strive for union. And of course the word strive is misleading because it implies that we work hard at it. But one of the things that we've come to realize is that very often working hard at it just increases the feeling of separation. So perhaps a more skillful way of working with our feelings of separation or our feelings of grief or our feelings of woundedness or whatever comes up to block the heart or to block love, is to begin to recognize that love being present as presence is always actually all the time holding us, even in our separation. This is what we call the non-dual recognition. In other words, the capacity to welcome however we're feeling, however contracted we're feeling, with a kind of softening, a kind of recognition, a kind of embrace that allows us to actually be present to whatever is coming up, whether it's a thought, whether it's a sense of unhappiness, whether it's a distraction, whether it's a problem. We can allow ourselves to be present to whatever is coming up with the recognition that we are always already loved, accepted, and held by that foundational consciousness, which is at the core of every cell. So one of the ways to practice with the sense of separation or with pain or anger or jealousy or the sense of unworthiness or any of the other, you know, kind of unlove, manifestations of unlove, is to recognize that even unlove is accepted by love. So I'd like to ask you now to do this practice by taking yourself into one of your standard or classic feelings of unlove. I had an experience about 2 weeks ago, which I'm going to use as a kind of a template for what I'm going to ask you guys to do. I was doing a kind of a puja ceremony. I was walking around my house. I have various altars around my house, and I was doing an Indian ceremony of puja where you wave lights to the sacred spaces in your house, and I took the light outside and I was waving the lights to the hills and waving the lights to the sky and feeling extremely expanded, very soft, and you know, even spaced out. I was feeling just this enormous sense of openness in the recognition of sacred space. And as I was in that space, my cell phone pinged, and I went to look at the instant message ping signed, and I went to look at the message, and the message was a message from a friend of mine saying that something that we had planned to do together we couldn't do because of something that had come up. And for some reason, that receiving that message at that particular moment just infuriated me. I was thinking, well, this friend, you know, she always kind of makes dates and cancels them, and I canceled another appointment in order to do this, and it was just this totally irrational feeling of anger. But I was there in sacred space, and so rather than saying this is an irrational feeling of anger, she can't help it, it's no big deal, maybe you didn't even really want to do it anyway, you know, so why are you angry? Or instead of doing the opposite and, you know, kind of letting that annoyance morph into a bigger story about this person or about, you know, the various disappointments that occur in life, I just allowed myself to feel where the irritation and anger was in my body, and it was more or less in my heart, and to feel at the same time the sense of sacred space that was also present. Because the interesting thing was that the spaciousness that had arisen as a result of my practice and as the result of my feeling of sacredness had not disappeared. It was just that the emotional intensity of the anger had kind of pushed it into the background. So I stood there for a moment, actually for about 10 minutes, holding the two together. And what I noticed was that, and I'm going to ask you to do this in a moment, what I noticed was that the feeling of anger, which I felt in the area of my lower heart and upper solar plexus, began to morph, and instead of being an irritable, an irritable, angry feeling with the threads of storyline that one customarily attaches to anger, it began to morph into a feeling of enormous, quiet power. And the sense of sacred space kind of, it seemed to open up the edges of the anger feeling so that the anger, it wasn't exactly that it dissolved into space. It's just that being held in the sense of space allowed the energy, the shakti, in the heart of the anger to literally reveal itself as a source of energy and power. It was a very powerful moment, because one of the characteristics of it was that I hadn't been trying to make the anger go away, which is what we often try and do with an unpleasant emotion. I wasn't trying to make it go away, and I wasn't getting lost in the story about it either. So that's what we're going to do as a practice, and it's a practice that I really recommend, and I'm going to give it to you as part of your homework. It's a practice that we can work with any form of endarkening feeling, whether it's a passionate one like anger, or a more swampy one like sadness or depression, whether it's a sense of grievance or a sense of resentment or a sense of resistance. You can work with any of these emotions by holding them in the spaciousness and warmth, which are the, let's say, the felt characteristics of the intrinsic love that's our nature. So just take a moment, and unpleasant though it may be, just consider something in your life now that is disturbing to you, that you maybe feel angry about or scared about, or that seems problematical or that's irritating. It could be a situation, it could be a person that pushes your buttons. But see if you can actually find the situation and then find the feeling. And what I'm really asking you to do is to get in touch with a feeling of, you know, negativity, anger, grievance, resentment, especially grievance, especially the feeling of having been done wrong by somebody. You know, it's a particular emotional sensation that most of us have had off and on at many times in our life. And even though you may have used the person or the sensation, you know, the person or the situation to trigger the feeling, you don't want to focus on the person's crimes and misdemeanors or on any of the reasons why you feel angry, disappointed, resentful, grieving. You acknowledge the sensations, but what you really want to do is find the feeling in your body, find the place where this emotional presence is located in your body. And whatever it is, anger, jealousy, worry, give it space to be present. So you're paying attention now to whatever sensations you feel in your body and where you're feeling them. And you actually want to turn towards the sensation so that, you know, just as if it were a person that was feeling out of sorts, you're just meeting it, acknowledging it, softening to it. And notice how it feels to allow this physical sensation to be present. Give it space to be there. And you might even want to go a little bit farther and see if you can actually open your heart to this feeling, open your love nature to this feeling. and notice what it's like to allow the feeling to be there and also to turn towards it with a sense of openness, a sense of warmth. Does anything emerge? Is there a shift that you notice in your body? Is there a new feeling? Does the energy of the original feeling move? Does it change? And can you be consciously present to whatever new feeling has arisen? So be with the breath. Notice the feeling and the feeling or feelings in your body. And also be present to the sensation of your body in the seat of the room you're in. To see if you can include the whole field of your experience, including my voice, while staying present to the feeling, the felt sense inside your body of the emotion that has morphed or not. And because this is a practice that we're going to be doing this week, I would really love it if anyone has something that you'd like to share about what just happened, or a question that you have about it and how it relates to what we're doing overall. So if you would like to speak, you can press *7 and you will be on the line. And in the meantime, while you're deciding whether you'll speak or ask a question, we can sit in this silence, in this space. And have this experience of allowing whatever is coming up to be present in the field, which is actually always the field of love. So I just saw a a signal on my screen that says that somebody, and your name isn't here, but
Janet.
Janet, hi. You're in LaGrange, Illinois.
No, I'm in Tucson, Arizona. I'm at work in my office.
Okay.
I've had a busy day, but this little meditation broke something through. I felt incredible energy really in my root chakra. Mm. It was wonderful. Mm. And I just was aware of how tight I get in the middle of busy, busy days. And even as I was feeling this wonderful openness, it must be the ego energy or some energy that keeps saying, shut down, think about this, shut down, think about this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we all recognize that in the middle of a busy day. This is, there's something more important that I have to do than just be present. So, yeah. So how was it when you kind of hold that voice?
And I hold and quiet that voice, you mean, and return
thinking? Well, actually, not even quiet the voice, because what I'm going to suggest is not that you quiet the voice, but that you feel in your body what the effect of that voice is. Right, so...
It was funny, but yeah, okay. That voice wasn't what I was paying attention to. I was paying attention to other feelings and blocks and relaxing into that. And okay, I would have had to pay attention. I just tried to get back to where I was feeling the energy in my body.
Okay.
Because it was like something was tugging at me, and I was attached to the energy in my body, but something kept pulling at me, and I tried to refocus on the energy in my body.
Yeah.
So I didn't turn around and focus on the voice, which is what you're saying, correct?
That's one of the ways to work on let's call it the voice of distraction, right? The voice that's you actually include it in the process of holding your experience and feeling what each facet of your experience is doing in your body. So the emotion, which may be deeper, is appearing in one way in your body, but the voices of distraction are also present in your body. They are felt in your body, often around your eyes. Just as the deeper emotions are usually felt.
In my head.
A tightness in your head, exactly. Exactly. So the more you can expand your awareness and have the sense of holding the bodily sensation that you become conscious of when you find the voices of distraction in the body, the more can you notice that they begin to morph a bit, right? The feeling in your head begins to change a bit. So I'm going to let you be with that and as I see you, you've fallen into meditation, Janet, which is great. And is there someone else who has something that you'd like to say? Yes.
Sally, I think I'm in, my signal is coming from LaGrange.
You're LaGrange, yes. Hi,
yes.
Beth.
No, it's Sis.
Sis, oh, hi.
Hi.
I heard Beth for some reason.
Actually, for the last few weeks, I've been hearing this grievance that I have with a very dear friend, and it's somewhat similar to what you were speaking about, circumstances difference, but as I held it in my body, I can like feel a focal point. It's like on the side of my, on the left side of my heart and my heart chakra. And there's this, and the more I felt it physically, the more the words changed and they just got kind of shorter and crisper and clearer to this, this really deep grievance that like turns into a passive aggression, like I'm not going to love you.
Right. Yes, excuse me for laughing. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It feels terrible.
Well, it's
physically horrible.
And it's very old, too, probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'll withhold my most precious thing, even if it breaks my heart to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've gotten to something pretty, pretty strong and old and you know, and rooted. And,
rooted.
Yeah.
Oh, it feels...
Yeah. Go ahead.
I wish I could say it's morphing, but the only thing that's changing is the deeper clarity of how deep the grievance goes.
Yeah, and the thing is that sense of grievance, and I would say probably most of us have it. It's a very old grievance against life that comes from from not being loved enough, and or the feeling of not being loved enough, and it's. So as you get clear about it, which is fantastic, as you get to the root of it, what you don't need to do is analyze it more. Even though I'm sure, you could do that. You could trace it back to events, but that's a different process. What you want to do, So just see if you can. If you can hold it and hold the sense of presence around it, and again, I imagine it as space, as sacred space, as just the space of awareness. So you're focusing in the felt sense of grievance, and it's fabulous that you kind of got to it, and you're focusing, but you're holding the space, you're holding presence.
Mm-hmm.
And
my jaw quivering.
Yeah. So be there with it. And but don't forget to be present with the space around it, with the field around it, with the spaciousness and warmth of your awareness.
To an eight.
Yes, it's, yeah. So hopefully others of you are going through your own process with this. This process of being present with the wounds of the heart, because that's what all these feelings are. Can often unleash something as deep as what Sis is experiencing. And when you're there, when you have it, and I think in a situation like this, and for all of you, because this is a very evolved group of people, it's not that hard to find that felt sense of grievance or sadness or resentment or jealousy or anger or alienation or whatever it is, it's not hard to find it. And the trick is to feel it and have that sense of space around it, of that space as the allowing, accepting presence. The spaciousness and warmth, which is the felt signature of love. You know, so again, love is not just an ecstatic emotional experience. Love is that felt sense of presence, that openness and warmth which can hold your contractions and be present to the contraction. And actually, literally hold the contraction the way a mother or a lover holds a grieving person, or the way a friend person.
Thank you, Sally.
Thank you, sis. So let's all be present with the breath. Can you press *6 and mute yourself? And Janet also. And I see Nancy's hand. Nancy?
Yes.
Yes, you're unmuted, so I thought you maybe had something to say.
I was just going to share that when I put the love in this excruciating pain that was going down my leg, it mm-hmm. dissolved it and it spawned.
Cool. That's so great. Yeah, there's kind of an amazing possibility in this practice. And sometimes something very immediate will happen, sometimes not. What I think you'll find in those of you who've worked with this practice, I know some of you have worked with this practice of creating a holding spaciousness around pain, physical pain, emotional pain, disease, is over time, it actually is the most powerful method for bringing the energy of grace into contraction. And it will, again, over time, sometimes gradually and sometimes dramatically, and if it's very deep, it even when there is a shift in the moment, it's not necessarily that this is it. You may have to come back to it. But this really is the essence of what the path of purification is on the path of love. It's allowing love to be present with grievance, with anger, not trying to push it away, but really allowing it to be dissolved by the awareness love. In the Narada Bhakti Sutras, there is a sutra. Which says that the inner enemies, and he lists them as anger, jealousy, etc., must be discarded in order to have the unbroken experience of divine love. And like all sutra literature, it doesn't exactly tell you how they should be discarded. But for centuries, and I think for many of us in this lifetime, in our discomfort with these emotions, we've tried to put them out of our heart. We've tried to get rid of them. We've been ashamed of them, or alternatively, let ourselves get lost in the story about them. You know, in the drama, the narrative that we attach to the grievance, to the pain. And the answer that love gives is to really apply love's non-dual nature to the qualities within us that Narada calls the inner enemies. In the classical Indian tradition, they're called kleshas. In Western spiritual language. They're called passions. You know, there are many names, and we know them well. You know, in Christian literature, they're called, you know, they're the seven deadly sins. But what they really are the contractions of unlove that have been accumulated through the various ways in which our hearts have been broken in this lifetime and others. And our journey into the unblocked heart, into the capacity to actually stay in love. The secret of it is really to keep bringing presence, love in the form of presence and awareness, to the felt sense of these emotions inside the body. The way I think of it is that it's actually the gift that divine love has revealed to us. It's the method that divine love has revealed to us for becoming the loving parent, let's say, of our wounded child self, of our sulky, grievance-holding, resentful, you know, all those feelings that we have as children and that kind of don't grow up because the pain and shame of them kind of keeps them there. So in this process of awakening, of, you know, perhaps an awakening of looking into ourselves. Nancy, you can press *6 and mute yourself. Thank you. And but in this process of having awakened to love, having awakened to presence, which is love, we can allow love to embrace unlove. And sometimes very dramatically and sometimes little by little transform our consciousness from, so that all the parts of us that are uncooked or unloving or unloved can begin to open up and integrate simply by being seen and felt and known inside the body. It's one of the enormous gifts that as contemporary practitioners we have discovered through the recognition of the magic that can happen when we step out of the story we're telling ourselves about our feelings and step into actually feeling them in our physical and subtle body, and then holding them rather than trying to push them away or getting caught up in them. So that's one of the practices we're going to be doing in the week to come. And it is really the face of the path of love as purification. You know, in the literature of bhakti, the literature of the literature of devotion, there's often a lot of talk about heartbreak, because heartbreak is one of the facets of the relationship with spirit. And in Sufism, one of the names of God is the heart ravisher, and another one of the names of God is the heartbreaker. You know, in bhakti literature, Krishna is called Madhur. He's called Madhu, which means sweet. But he's also called, you know, he's he's described by his devotees as the one who breaks your heart, the one who dashes your heart against the rocks. And so it's one of the extraordinary paradoxes of the relationship with spirit, that it's the most healing relationship we can have in the normal sense of the way we use the word healing. You know, it offers refuge. It offers this melting, protective love that's the essence of softness. It's the essence, we could say, of motherliness. But the other face of love, one of its many faces, but the other face of love that we meet in sadhana, in practice, is this face that turns us, you know, literally turns us inside out. And one of the things that I came to realize over the years is that because love is literally the evolutionary force, it's the yearning force of being, it's the force that wants to bring us so deeply into itself that all of our delusion that we are not made of love are completely melted. It is going to sometimes shake us, heat us, open us up so that we can and simultaneously strengthen us so that we can contain the full force of itself. So it's a strange paradox that the armor of the heart has to break in order for us to be able to fully let love in. And at the same time, the heart has to be really strong in order to contain the hugeness of the love that we are. In the Indian tradition, there's a famous story about a king who goes to a great sage for initiation, and the guru tells him to come the next morning and bring a cup. And so the king comes with the silver cup that he normally drinks from, and the guru takes him outside, takes him to the royal zoo, where there's a tiger in the cage, and he has his attendant milk the tiger and pour the milk into the king's cup, and the tiger's milk literally eats away the bottom of the cup because it's so strong and so hot. I don't know if this is really true about tiger's milk, but it makes a great metaphor for the fiery quality of the energy of love when it's entering you in this very, very full way. And the guru says, you know, you can't hold the milk, just as you can't hold the milk of a tiger in a silver cup, you need a gold cup to hold the milk of the tiger. In fact, he brings a golden cup, and the golden cup actually holds it. You know, in the same way, we need a heart that's very open and very strong in order to hold the enormous power of love, which is what we are. So as we begin to recognize how love and spirit are different facets of the one that has become all this, we also recognize that if we're going to open up to the great love, we also will open up to the intrinsic pain of the world, because spirit, as us and as everything, is the body of the world. Spirit is dancing as the world. Spirit has become the world. And that means that spirit is experiencing the pain, the anger, confusion of everyone and everything in the world, as well as its joy, its lightness, and its bliss. So spirit actually has nowhere to hide when there's pain. And yet at the same time, because spirit is infinitely subtle and infinitely strong, and because spirit is love itself, it can hold pain, including your pain. Spirit is inside everything, loving as us, suffering as us, and it's also outside everything, holding and containing and embracing us, and therefore inviting us to allow whatever holds us back to melt inside its embrace. And it's really in that process that we become the golden cup that can hold love and offer love and literally overflow as love. So you can close your eyes. Allow yourself to feel the breath flowing in and flowing out. Allow yourself to feel that taking form out of the air, in the air before you, is the embodied form of the Beloved. The Beloved who is both your inner companion and also your true self. And the extraordinary thing is that just as the guide of our soul can take a form, in the same way, the self as the Beloved has a form. So just in this moment, notice what form the Beloved takes. It may be quite palpable. It may be amorphous. It may have a feeling, be a feeling more than something visual. You may even sense that the Beloved looks like you. Just have the sense that your Beloved inner self, who is also your deepest inner companion, yourself, who is also your Beloved companion, the paradox of our inner being. What form does the inner Beloved take for you at this moment? And as you allow yourself to sense the presence of the inner beloved, realize that he or she, and it may not even have a human form, is radiantly smiling with the enormous shared secret of who you really are and how deeply and personally you are loved and how completely formlessly you are love. So with the breath, you draw in the loving, even humorous, surprising presence of the beloved. And with the exhalation, you breathe the love and the prana back to this being. And feel that, know that this inner beloved, this being who can appear before you as a separate presence, but who is actually totally one with your heart, able to reveal to you the infinite, precious, golden, awake, adoring and adorable being that you are. With your next inhalation, just let yourself breathe in the beloved presence. Draw it into your heart. And feel how its energy, its rays, its light, its subtle power enlivens your whole body. And breathes through you. As your awareness rides the breath, flowing into the heart, flowing out through the heart. Have a beautiful evening. Feel the deep blessing that you are. Feel how you're loved and feel that you're love. Have a beautiful evening. Namaste.